When was your hardest time?
My hardest time?
In your Five Guys journey.
Yeah. Well, I went through a very painful divorce and went through something called leave to remove, which I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. It's the right to have your children taken out of the country. So I had two young children who the court system approved leave to remove, which allowed my ex to take my kids back to America, which was incredibly painful. And my whole view of myself, my definition of who I was, changed. I thought of myself as a great partner, good husband, good father, devoted father. I was in politics back in America, was involved in my community and a church leader and businessman. And I thought, all these things are who I am. And essentially all of that was, quite a large bonfire of vanities. And that was a real dark moment for me. And there were days when Five Guys was the one thing in my life that was stable and that I could hold on to. And that really pulled me through a very difficult, dark time personally.
How long did that process last?
That's part of the UK challenge. It took years, better part of 2 years were in that process. Trying to rebuild those relationships. And thankfully, I'm in an amazing place with my kids now and have accepted that we have had a more adult relationship prematurely, but now that they're both at university, it feels more normal now. And those are hard-fought, hard-won, recast relationships, which were really important to me. But the thought that they were at risk was caused just enormous anxiety, and living with that kind of anxiety on the personal side, having a place where things were more predictable, was and being able to work in that way and provide for them was a real really helped me through.
When your kids are essentially taken away to another country, and you've got this huge responsibility of running this big business. Hmm. How does that impact your ability to show up every day professionally?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was really complex for me because I had a non-compete back in the US for the business that I had sold. So I couldn't just relocate back to America and do my job. So it felt like a huge catch-22 because I had these court-ordered financial obligations, and the only way that I could really fulfill them was to keep doing my job here. So
court-ordered financial obligations is in the separation costs and stuff that you have to pay to your partner.
Yeah, exactly. So it felt like a catch-22. They were allowed to leave, but I had to provide for them, so I had to stay. And so it felt like a kind of a indentured servanthood for a bit. But being able to focus on the important job that I had actually was enormously relieving, because I knew that for 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, whatever it ended up being, that I could actually do something productive that I knew I was good at, that made a difference for them, and that the anxiety of being separated, I could set aside for a few for those hours in a day, and that was really helpful. It could have just kind of overwhelmed me. But work was able to, it was a place where I could escape from that.
Did you see your motivation fluctuate? Often when we have these like pretty substantial life events, there's an initial period where getting out of bed in the morning is a little bit more difficult. It's almost like someone has messed with your why, your reason to get out of bed and your sense of purpose.
Yeah.
So you almost have to, I've learned from my own experiences that you have to spend a little bit of time. You're almost faking it. To get the drive back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, of course. No, well, I told you I got up at 5 a.m. when I was a kid and practiced violin for an hour before school. And I was never a great musician, but what I did find was that if you did something every day, you actually could get better at it, maybe even more than competent. And I think it was something like that that just in me, you know, said, you know, get out of bed, do the next thing, and things will change. I called a friend of mine who'd been through a similar situation, and he said, you know, just keep showing up. You know, texting my son every day, calling, you know, every day, being as present as I possibly could. And, you know, obviously it's imperfect, and it's deeply upsetting, I'm sure, to them as well as to me. But doing as much as you possibly can to be available and in touch. And then you just have to trust something that it'll be okay.
Trust something. As in just trust life that it will.
No, I mean, you know, I now we're getting very personal, Stephen, but you know, I believe in a higher power. I don't pretend to understand it, but I think there's something much more powerful than I am in the world. And what I will say is that it helped me to see the world in two camps. One are things that I can control, and some things that I absolutely can't control. And if you allocate your mental health and your time on the things that you can't control, you can drive yourself to distraction and eventually madness. So being able to focus on the things that you can control, and realizing that that's your job. You know, your job as a human is to do the things that you can control. And if you it's just arrogance and ignorance to focus on the things that you can't control. And so identifying those two camps and being at peace with that, accepting that you can't, some things you can't control, that's really hard, but it's hugely important.
Yeah, I was at this festival this weekend, and there was I did one-on-one meetings with lots of people that were in the audience for 3 hours, and I found myself being asked over and over again how to deal with exactly that, which is when chaos arrives in our lives, what to do on that day. And people had me recording these voice notes for them for that day. So when that day comes, they just wanted to be able to play it. And what you said there is exactly what I said, which is there are a small list of things you can control. And on that tough day, make a promise to me that you'll spend 100% of your mental energy focusing only on those things. Because you can't, because obviously yesterday, focusing too much on that tends to lead to depression, as I think the Lou Sow, the philosopher, says, focusing too much on tomorrow and the things that are yet to be in your control will also cause a lot of anxiety. So really focusing in on today, I think, is just phenomenal advice in terms of it's the thing that's most conducive with a successful outcome, but B, it's also the thing that's most conducive with having a healthy mental state in total chaos.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think the other thing is that realizing that our purpose in life is human connection. I think that's why we're here. I think we're made to connect. And sometimes it's, you know, we're colliding, you know, and more than connecting, but figuring out how to connect with other human beings. And I will say, you know, that was the making of me as in being able to you know, when someone comes into my office and says, you know, I've lost my partner, you know, they passed away, you know, way before their time, you know, being able to connect with that person in that moment of loss is hugely valuable as a company, but hugely meaningful to me as a human being, and I wouldn't have been able to do that if I hadn't been through the loss that I had experienced. So, you know, it's one of those things where you end up being grateful for the most upsetting things that happen in your life, because I think they're the making of you in many ways.
Because of what you said at the start of this conversation about that importance of feeling like you belonged, and that's so, it's so evident that that is much of the reason you've also been successful is you mean, even from this short conversation we've had, you strike me as a very empathetic person who is able to connect with others. That moment must have been presumably even more difficult, because your sense of belonging in that moment was taken from you to some degree. The family unit, right?
No, for sure. That was a defining moment. But now, you know, the thing about Five Guys is that, you know, we have these 8,600 people who get up every morning and have this shared vision mission to make great burgers and fries for hungry customers. And I get to be a part of that. And, you know, I get to be a part of this larger community that has this, that, you know, winning in business feels fantastic, right? I mean, it's a real high. It's a drug and it's an addiction. And being a part of a community that's accomplishing this thing. You know, we were the eighth fastest growing business in 2016, I think, in the UK, and the fastest growing food and beverage business. And even with that, we never met a budget that I had made. So we were fastest, but you know, still behind by my mind. And being a part of this community that shares our values and that are all working towards this is enormously satisfying. And fill something that you know has always been empty.
Some days as CEOs, we're tired, or you know, we're in a bad mood, or something's off. We can sometimes not show up as our best selves. And sometimes when that happens with me, I regret it. So I'll go home and think, I wish I'd handled that situation differently. Does that happen to you a lot, where you think, oh, fuck, I wish I'd been in a better mood, or I'd slept more today, or something?
Yeah, Julie tells me when.
Who's Julie?
Julie, my head of ops. She comes in and says, "Yeah, you really fucked up that meeting."
That was.
But actually having somebody who, to me, the one of the worst things that can happen are these, emperor has no clothes, where the most important, powerful person in a business has blind spots that, you know, everybody knows about, and somehow you work around. And that's just hugely dangerous as a business. And having people who can come into your office and go, "John, that comment was just way out of line or really unhelpful. You know, you now have people thinking like this. Is that what you wanted?" So people who can confront power with truth. And, you know, to me, that kind of culture is hugely important to a company, because you can go so wrong with the emperor has no clothes and people thinking, "God, we know this, we just can't tell them to that person."
How do you cultivate that? Because I imagine a lot of CEOs and a lot of team members that work for a CEO think, "Oh, there's no way I could go to my CEO and tell him that was wrong, or he shouldn't have said that." She shouldn't have said that.
I think publicly owning your shit is really helpful in that way. You know, so showing up at the next meeting and go, "Hey, you know what? I said this to the last meeting, and that was just really wrong. It was off, and you know, I was off my game, or you know, I didn't think it through, and you know, and it should be the opposite. The opposite of that." And you know, showing that you can respond to that kind of challenge, I think is important as a leader. And then you give everybody else permission to do the same thing. You know, I mean, you can change your mind. You're allowed to change your mind. You're allowed to be wrong as a fallible human being too. And confessing that, it's powerful.